This is InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
Rising housing costs emphasize the debate between investment versus shelter, suggesting a need for new strategies. One expert says current regulations hinder urban renewal.
I want local governments to recognize what is in their interest and what is in the interest of their voters, their taxpayers, their citizens, the people in their community. And that is a very bottom-up approach.
Then, obstructive sleep apnea affects millions. The most common treatment are CPAP machines, but a recent study had surprising findings.
When CPAP is used, it definitely takes care of these neurocognitive symptoms, but surprisingly, it doesn't really take care of cardiovascular symptoms as we thought it would.
Those two stories and more are ahead on this week's show. InfoTrack begins right after this.
Tax Talk with Straight Talk.
You give and you give. This tax season you get with Straight Talk Wireless. You get a reliable 5G network and unlimited data and a Samsung Galaxy A14 included when you buy an extended Silver Unlimited plan. Yeah. So you can give your janky phone to your kid.
Yeah! Switch to Straight Talk. Find us at Walmart and StraightTalk.com. For network management practices, visit StraightTalk.com. Device offer ends 4/14/24. Taxes and fees apply.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Brakes? We can save you 15% on that. We have OE quality Duralast brake pads and rotors in stock, ready for pickup or delivery. We also have calipers, brake fluid, tools, and anything else you'll need to do the job right. When you get Duralast pads and rotors together, you'll save 15%. It's just part of what makes us America's number one brakes destination.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Gonna feel a puff of air.
Zhong's optometry has set their sights on staffing up.
Try the next line. Hey, Kim, can you tell our 2 o'clock we're running 15 behind? Sorry, we're a bit backed up today.
He needs an optometric technician to keep an eye on it all.
Where are the dilation drops?
Indeed can help him hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. You can schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from your employer dashboard. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
With Progressive Snapshot, you could save on auto insurance rates by driving safely, which is great because you're rarely rewarded for just being you. Ever get rewarded for being left-handed? No. You get to use weird scissors. Your reward for being a Capricorn? Cold birthdays that conflict with the holidays. And your reward for quickly responding to every work email? More emails. But with Snapshot, even left-handed Capricorns with proper email etiquette could get rewarded for good driving. So download the Progressive app today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Snapshot not available in all states or from all agents.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
America has a housing crisis. To discuss this, we're joined by Chuck Marone, author of the book, Escaping the Housing Trap, The Strong Town's Response to the Housing Crisis. Chuck, let's look at the history. What historical developments in housing finance have led to the current state of the housing market?
During the Great Depression, we did a number of things to stop the housing market from crashing and going down. We had people who were being foreclosed from their homes for no good reason, for no fault of their own. It's just because of the way the financing worked. And the federal government stepped in, and I think in a very compassionate, very moral way, stopped that decline from happening, allowed people to stay in their homes, kind of stabilize the market. At the end of the Great Depression and the Second World War, there was a fear amongst economists that the economy, when we demobilized all these troops and shut down all these military industries fighting the war, that we were just going to go right back into the Great Depression. You know, it was 1945, but there was really nothing different, take away the war, than 1935. That's not what happened. What happened is we took all of those tools that we had used to stop the deflation, to stop things from collapsing, and we kind of repurposed them to make the economy grow really fast. That has been the post-war experience. We pump money into infrastructure, we pump money into transportation, we subsidize housing, we make it easier for people to borrow more money. And that worked really, really well for a generation. When it started to slow down in the 70s, we started to kind of switch to financialization I was going to say financial manipulation, but the idea is we made it continuously easier for banks to loan more and more money to people. And you wind up with an economy now today where home prices are much more sensitive to macroeconomic conditions than they are to people's ability to pay.
Let's talk about the tension between looking at housing as a financial product, as you were just talking about, versus a fundamental human need for shelter.
Yeah, we today see Americans go purchase homes and they are buying a house. And we look at it as the home buyer is the consumer and the house is the product. But the reality is in our marketplace today, in the way that our financial system and our overall market is created, the product in that transaction is a mortgage. And the consumer is, in a sense, Wall Street or the investors or bundlers or what have you, that are going to use that to create part of a mortgage-backed security or some other financial instrument. We need to create mortgages in order for our banks to have collateral, in order for our system to function, in order for money to flow. And so the purchase of a home is really an ability to create financial instruments for this broader market. Because of that, in order for the investment to work, in order for people who are buying these things to experience the types of gains and returns that they need to experience, housing not only cannot go down in price, it actually needs to go up and up and up and up and up. This is at tension with housing as what it is for you and me, shelter. We need a place to live. And the more housing prices go up and up and up, sure, that might be great for investors, for market returns, but it becomes increasingly difficult for human beings in the US to live in that situation. We find it hard to get into a home. If we're in a home, we find it very difficult to move and switch homes. We find ourselves falling behind more and more and more. If you are in a community like mine where housing tends to be a little bit cheaper, you see yourself falling behind areas where it's more expensive, kind of perversely. So there is a whole bunch of tension that is created when housing becomes a financial product because it actually becomes less responsive. It stops being sensitive or responsive to actual supply and demand, what people need, what your ability to pay is.
Our guest is Chuck Marone, author of the book, Escaping the Housing Trap, The Strong Town's Response to the Housing Crisis. NIMBY is an acronym that stands for Not in My Backyard. How do zoning policies and NIMBYisms contribute to the housing challenges you've mentioned?
After World War II, the marketing brochure of this American expansion was that you could live in an idealistic neighborhood. We actually had leading thinkers at the time called this permanent prosperity. You could buy into a neighborhood that would have permanent prosperity. I think we can look today and realize the ridiculousness of that. When you build a neighborhood all at once and you build it to a finished state, and then you lock it in place through zoning regulations and the like that say this neighborhood can never evolve and change and become something else. What happens is you get a brief period of time where it looks and feels prosperous. But then there's this echo where like everybody's roof goes bad at the same time because all the houses in the whole neighborhood were built at the same time. So everybody needs a new roof at the same time. Everybody needs new siding at the same time. Everybody needs their sidewalks fixed at the same time. And so the neighborhood all goes up at once and it all like starts to go bad at once. What happens quite naturally is kind of two things. The first one is that the more affluent people in that neighborhood pick up and move. They move to the next place where the marketing brochure has a little bit more cachet, right? A little bit more believable than a neighborhood that's falling apart. This leaves behind people with less affluence in a neighborhood that is now struggling. And the reaction that starts to build up is, well, we want things to stay where they are. We don't want things to get worse. We don't want things to get bad. And you wind up with almost like a reactionary impulse to kind of oppose all change. This is the NIMBY, not in my backyard kind of manifest. And so when we look around, what we see is that there really is no upside to growth. There really is no upside to change. There really is no upside to new in this suburban post-war model. And so the best thing that I can do is just oppose everything. Just stop growth, stop change, try to get the city to be really strict on enforcement, keep renters out, stop the decline. And of course, this is a very anti-human impulse. It's an anti-success impulse. It's a self-defeating impulse. But I also think if we're honest with ourselves, it's a very human impulse to this very weird artificial system that we've created post-war.
Chuck, looking forward, what's your vision for the future of housing in America and how do we get there?
My vision is a very bottom-up one. We need cities, local governments, to recognize that they have a very big toolbox that they can use. That toolbox has been used in the service of this kind of macroeconomic approach by having lots of big transactions, by inviting in the cataclysmic money. But if we step back and look, none of that has been in the interest of local governments. None of it's been the interest of neighborhoods. It's really not in the interest of running a successful, prosperous place. It almost, in a sense, mines the wealth from cities to do this. I want local governments to recognize what is in their interest and what is in the interest of their voters, their taxpayers, their citizens, the people in their community, where not only from a regulatory standpoint do we allow things like backyard cottages and single family homes becoming duplexes and lots and lots and lots of building of starter kind of units, like smaller units that we can just fit in everywhere. We need regulatory approaches that not just empower this or allow this, but really kickstart it in a big way to create a bottom anchor on the price appreciation. But city governments can actually be financial catalysts in this. We can help grow an ecosystem of incremental local developers. We can help fund that. Cities have all kinds of tools that they're ready to hand out to corporations and franchises and others in economic development standpoint. We can use a lot of those tools just scaled down much, much smaller scale for incremental developers to get the type of housing built that we need to build. And we can do that at no cost to taxpayers. I mean, we can do it at very little cost, very little risk, very little effort, just by using the tools we have, redirecting our energy from the big top-down projects to many, many, many small bottom-up incremental projects.
Well, the book is Escaping the Housing Trap. The author is Chuck Marone. Chuck, we want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for the conversation.
Next, new research on CPAP machines. That story coming up.
Don't go away. InfoTrack will be back right after this.
Tax Talk with Straight Talk.
You give and you give. This tax season you get with Straight Talk Wireless. You get a reliable 5G network and unlimited data and a new Samsung Galaxy A15 for just $99. So you can give your janky phone to your kid.
Yeah!
Good talk.
Switch to Straight Talk for plans starting as low as $25 a line per month for 4 lines. Find us at Walmart and StraightTalk.com. For network management practices, visit StraightTalk.com. Device offer ends 4/14/24. In-store activation on single Silver Unlimited plan or higher required. Family plan discount with 4 lines all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Taxes and fees apply.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
I need new oil for my truck. Really? I need a new truck.
Mobil 1 is giving away a 2024 Chevy Colorado ZR2. When you pick up 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic with an STP extended life oil filter for $35.99, you're entered for a chance to win.
Whoa.
Other prizes include a year's supply of Mobil 1 or a $100 gift card.
Never been so excited for an oil change.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
No purchase necessary. Terms at AutoZone.com. Ends 5/27/24.
So you just used bug spray in your home. Now what? Well, between the waiting and waiting for things to dry up and keeping your family away from the mess, it hits you. You could have used Zevo. Unlike other bug sprays that stick around, Zevo goes from kill to clean in seconds. Plus, it's safe for use around people and pets when used as directed. Zevo, people friendly, bug deadly.
Progressive presents Good News, Bad News, Dumb News, then Great News. Good news. While leaning over the fence, your neighbor said you could save money bundling home and auto insurance with Progressive. Bad news. Your neighbor leaned over a little too much and broke your fence. Dumb news. Somehow fence wood is more expensive than wood would. Great news. You decide to see if you could save money bundling at Progressive.com and to plant really tall shrubs. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers not available in all states.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Sleep apnea affects millions of Americans, with obesity the biggest risk factor. But recent research revealed a surprising finding with more. Here's InfoTrack's Roy Mackey. Roy?
Thanks, Chris.
Sanja Jelic, MD, is a critical care medicine specialist and sleep researcher at Columbia University's Vagelos College of Physicians and Surgeons. Dr. Jelic, just to set the stage a bit, I think most people have heard of CPAP machines, but can you give us a very brief explanation of what they are and what they treat?
CPAP stands for Continuous Positive Airway Pressure. It's a little machine which sits on a patient's bedside, and it's connected with a plastic tubing the size of, say, vacuum cleaner tubing to the small face mask, and it delivers regular air under little pressure to stent the airway open. And the reason we use this is that almost a third of men and approximately 20% of women in Western countries have something called obstructive sleep apnea, which means that when people fall asleep, the muscles that stent their throat open relax normally, and that's a normal process. But in these people, it's exaggerated, so it's very floppy and it occludes. And when the person tries to breathe in, the air doesn't go in and it closes, so no oxygen goes in, so that's a real problem.
How many people simply go untreated for sleep apnea?
That's a real problem. About 80 to 90% of these patients remain undiagnosed and untreated. Out of those patients that are actually diagnosed, those 10 to 20%, approximately half loves their CPAP and they use it, and half really does not like their CPAP and they don't use it.
What are the most common risk factors for sleep apnea?
The number one risk factor is really obesity, because the adipose tissue accumulates everywhere, including around the airway, and makes the airway smaller to begin with, so it has a greater tendency to occlude when we sleep.
And people with sleep apnea tend to have a greater risk of heart disease?
Yes. The reason for that is that when patients with sleep apnea stop breathing or substantially reduce the airflow that goes into their lungs during sleep, that results in transiently low oxygen levels in their blood, as well as a few seconds awakenings from sleep at the end of this obstruction, because there is no air, there is no oxygen, so the brain kind of wakes up in panic trying to breathe again. These two things have two broadly negative consequences. One is obviously increased cardiovascular risk, or risk for heart disease, stroke, or heart failure, or heart attack and such. And that doesn't happen, you know, tomorrow. It happens over time, over many years, but it does increase the risk 2 to 3-fold for heart disease and stroke over time. Depends on the severity of obstruction. And then another broadly kind of negative consequence is this neurocognitive problems, because of these repetitive awakenings from sleep. Patients feel very tired during the day, and in some patients that manifest as a daytime sleepiness. So when CPAP is used, it definitely takes care of these neurocognitive symptoms, but surprisingly, it doesn't really take care of cardiovascular symptoms as we thought it would.
Yes, I wanted to touch on that. The conventional medical wisdom was that CPAP machines would also reduce a patient's risk of heart disease, but your research has raised serious questions about that. Tell us what you've found in your most recent work.
Yes, that's correct. So we, just like everyone else, thought that these small studies, which were not randomized to CPAP or no CPAP, over the years, suggesting that the cardiovascular risk would improve. And including one of my own studies showed that just application of CPAP over 10 to 12 years reduces the new onset high blood pressure. So, and that still holds. The data for high blood pressure as a primary prevention, if you don't have it, it is less likely to get it if you have sleep apnea and you are treated. However, such studies are very difficult to conduct for other hard cardiovascular outcomes, such as, let's say, heart attack. All the studies take patients who already have some kind of cardiovascular event, they have a disease, and see whether treating, in this case, obstructive sleep apnea would reduce the risk of further events. Initially, the small studies, which were not randomized, just observational, kind of hinted that that could be the case, but three really well-conducted, large, randomized trials of CPAP versus no CPAP did not show that effect. They were flat. They didn't show that CPAP is worse, but they showed that CPAP is not better either. It was the equivalent as not using CPAP with regards to getting another cardiovascular event, say heart attack, stroke, or hospitalization for cardiovascular causes. So the question is, why is this happening? Why is it not working? Because we know from experimental studies, both in human as well as in animal models, that this repetitive low oxygen levels are actually the culprit for increased cardiovascular risk. So if we are eliminating it with effective therapy, why is this not translating into improved cardiovascular risk? So we inadvertently noticed that one of the molecules that indicates a pro-inflammatory state, it is released with cells lining the blood vessels throughout the body, including in the lungs. And that molecule is increased to begin with in untreated patients with sleep apnea compared to just controls who don't have it. So we expected, obviously, the treatment with CPAP would lower that level of that molecule. However, it increased it. So that was really surprising. Again, these three trials didn't show that CPAP is worse. It just showed that it doesn't benefit the patient. But based on our findings, you would think that it would make them worse. So we just discovered that patients on the lower pressures of CPAP, when compared to those who receive greater CPAP pressures, were better off. In other words, if the patient is using very high CPAP pressures, that kind of inflates their lungs, and that's the source of some of these pro-inflammatory factors. And it resembles patients with ventilator-induced lung injury. I think post-COVID, most of the general population is familiar with the ventilator. So CPAP use is not all that bad, but perhaps we should be using a little bit more conservative pressure, lower pressure. We don't really need to eliminate every possible obstructive event. We just have to lower it down to a reasonable level so the person feels good throughout the day without this daytime fatigue and sleepiness, because such approach is associated with use of higher CPAP pressure, which may have its own negative side effects.
Do you have any final words of advice for patients with sleep apnea?
Yes, despite all this, seek and treat obstructive sleep apnea. There is a very simple questionnaire where a primary care doctor can ask, do you snore? Do you kind of stop breathing and gasp for air while you sleep? Has anyone ever told you so, or your bed partner? And then there are some other things to look at, like level of obesity, age, presence or absence of high blood pressure. That all takes less than a minute to administer in the primary care visit. And if the certain points are reached, the patient can be referred and we can do a sleep study and then discuss these treatment options. Obviously, the best way to reduce the prevalence of obstructive sleep apnea would be to reduce the levels of obesity. The prevalence of sleep apnea in the world is about 1 billion. Just for comparison, the prevalence of high blood pressure is about 1.2 billion. So this makes it one of the most common chronic conditions in the world.
Sonja Jelic, MD, from the Columbia University Vagelos College of Physicians and Surgeons. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
So you just used bug spray in your home. Now what? Well, between the waiting and waiting for things to dry up and keeping your family away from the mess, it hits you. You could have used Zevo. Unlike other bug sprays that stick around, Zevo goes from kill to clean in seconds. Plus, it's safe for use around people and pets when used as directed. Zevo, people friendly, bug deadly.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Brakes? We can save you 15% on that. We have OE quality Duralast brake pads and rotors in stock, ready for pickup or delivery. We also have calipers, brake fluid, tools, and anything else you'll need to do the job right. When you get Duralast pads and rotors together, you'll save 15%. It's just part of what makes us America's number one brakes destination.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
You're listening to InfoTrack. To learn more about our guests or listen to past shows, visit InfoTrack online at InfoTrackRadio.com. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Modern technology can improve many things in life, but a research study of college students and laptop computers had results that might surprise you. With more, we welcome to InfoTrack Pam Mueller, who authored this study at Princeton University, along with Daniel Oppenheimer. Tell us about this study.
We actually ran three studies on students at Princeton and students at UCLA. And what we found was that students who took notes longhand rather than on laptops did significantly better, particularly on conceptual questions when we tested them later. And we were most surprised by the fact that this effect remained even when students had a chance to study their notes.
And you're talking about students in a classroom setting taking notes?
We ran controlled experiments in an attempt to simulate the classroom experience as naturalistically as possible. We showed students TED Talks and had them take notes on the lectures that were being given to them, and then we tested them later on that material.
Were you surprised by these findings?
Well, our initial hypothesis had been that longhand would be better. Both Danny Oppenheimer and I had had similar experiences where we'd been taking notes by hand and felt like we got a lot more out of whatever we were listening to, or, you know, we'd been taking notes on our laptops and realized we weren't really paying attention to what was going on. So the basic finding wasn't that surprising to us. The fact that it remained after students got a chance to study their notes was surprising. What seemed to be the mechanism that was going on was that laptop note takers took more notes, which is generally better. The more content in the notes, the better the student did. But they also took more verbatim notes, so they were just essentially sort of mindlessly transcribing the lecture content, and they weren't forced to process it because people can type a lot faster than they can write longhand. So they weren't really considering the information as it came in.
Is there any other hypothesis you might have, such as the physical act of writing, that might help people to remember better?
A lot of people have suggested that. What we tried to do in one of our studies that didn't work, but future work might get at, is attempt to get people who are taking notes on their laptops to not take this verbatim transcription-like note content. So we instructed students not to do that. We told them it would lead to poorer performance, but still they were unable to do it. They took just as many verbatim notes as students who weren't instructed to do that. So one way to test whether the actual physical act of handwriting is something special would be if we could find some way to get the people who were typing to take notes more like longhand note takers, that is, not verbatim. And if that improved their performance, then it would suggest that it's just this lack of processing. But if they didn't do better, then it would suggest that maybe the physical act is doing something as well.
Now, I understand you did this in a controlled situation, so the students with the laptops weren't allowed to go off surfing the internet or anything. But I would think that might be a temptation in a classroom to maybe get distracted if you had a laptop in front of you with a browser or whatever.
Oh, definitely. And there have been other studies looking at that. And students do tend to get distracted. And the students who are more off task do more poorly on tests of the material as well, as you might expect. There's lots of data on multitasking, and it's negative.
It's been quite a while since I was in college. What would you say the average percentage is of students who use a laptop to take notes in a classroom?
There seems to be a difference among schools. I think that it's sort of filtering into college classrooms now. Most students at Princeton use a laptop, I would say the vast majority. And when we asked students in our experiment if they took notes on a laptop or longhand, most of them said on a laptop. But at UCLA, where we ran some of the studies, a lot fewer students took notes on a laptop regularly.
Does that include tablets and other electronic devices, or are you just pretty much seeing laptops?
There are some students that have iPads, but they tend to use them as a laptop with an external keyboard. I haven't seen a lot of students using stylus technology, but I think that, you know, that might be useful going forward in terms of getting students to take sort of handwritten notes, but have an electronic copy later. I don't know that we're going to get people to just revert to taking longhand notes in notebooks, but I would caution people that if they're trying to learn content and they have their laptop in front of them, to really try to engage with the material and not just write everything down and figure that you'll sort it out later, because that really seems to have a negative impact on people's learning. Even though their content is there in their notes later when they study it, they still don't seem to be grasping it as well as they would have if they had understood it the first time.
Yeah, this is very interesting because, I mean, this could have implications for all kinds of learning situations. So, a great study. Thank you very much for joining us on InfoTrack.
Thank you.
And that's it for this edition of InfoTrack. To get more information about our guests and topics, you can find us online at infotrackradio.com. Internet services provided by Pear Networks. Our executive producer is Randy Meyer, and I'm Chris Whitting. We hope you'll join us right here next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
all the words, so crank it up and sing along.
Crank it up.
The Valley's fun music, 105.7 CFW. Fun music for Eau Claire, Chippewa Falls, and Wheaton. This is 105.7 CFW.
Thank you.
We're glad you're enjoying the Valley's fun music on 105.7 CFW. Did you know that there's a second brand new station in town? Yeah. When you're in the mood to talk about the local issues that matter to the Valley and all of Wisconsin, you're going to want to tap into our sister station, 93.5 The Tap. For local issues and information, it's 93.5 The Tap. And for the Valley's fun music, keep on listening to 105.7 CFW. Go ahead, spread the word.
Most of us can agree the decision to have an abortion should be between a person and their doctor. Politicians should have no say at all. Thankfully, Senator Tammy Baldwin is standing up for our rights and working to keep politicians out of our medical decisions. After Roe v. Wade, the court case that protected abortion rights was overturned. Tammy Baldwin introduced the Women's Health Protection Act, which would ensure access to abortion everywhere in the United States, including here in Wisconsin. The bill would end extreme abortion bans that have no exceptions for rape, incest, or the life of the mother, and threaten doctors with criminal charges for providing abortion care. Senator Baldwin also introduced legislation that would protect the right to travel across state lines for reproductive health care and safeguard access to contraception. Call Senator Tammy Baldwin at 202-224-5653. Tell her thank you for fighting back against extreme abortion bans. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
Are record energy costs putting a squeeze on your fixed or limited incomes? With inflation rising at record levels and incomes not keeping pace, you might be one of tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents who are struggling to survive in the blistering heat of summer or the bitter cold of winter. While you haven't asked for it, the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help. No Wisconsin resident should ever have to face the challenge of living without heat or power or face homelessness. For a hand up, apply today and call 1-800-506-5596. That's 800-506-5596. Or visit www.heat.help.
Ever wonder what's around the next corner? With a Nissan SUV's capability to thrust your big adventures to the next level, there's no need to wonder. The 2024 Nissan Rogue's class-exclusive Google built-in is your always updating assistant to call on for almost anything. And with Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system, there's no need to connect your phone. Go find your next adventure with the 2024 Nissan Rogue, the Nissan Pathfinder, or the Nissan Armada. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. We'll see mostly cloudy skies for your Easter Sunday. Highs in the upper 40s. A little bit of rain developing in the late afternoon. Light winds. For Sunday night, we'll see rain chances continue. Could mix with a little bit of snowfall overnight. Little to no accumulation. Lows in the lower 30s. Right now, it's 28.
CFW.
Thank you.
1057 CFW.
Machine.